Hi, this is Wendy Rule, sending you love and magic from Melbourne, Australia. My website is www.wendyrule.com and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Ghostly Talk? You go to addunderground.com and click on Slack and Radio every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time to check out past shows of Ghostly Talk.
Running a marathon today.
It's April 16th. It's Easter Sunday.
I just feel like I'm running a marathon for some reason. I'm trying to keep up with all this information we're getting tonight, and I'm like, all my responses seem like it's like, wow, cool, man. You know, I'm doing that.
Well, that's okay because I think I totally grilled Stephen Browdy. I don't think he's going to come out on the show ever again because I was like, what's this? What's that? And I feel bad about that because he is absolutely fascinating. And then we did jump topics a bit. Yeah, it seems a bit related.
It seems a bit related. That's the eerie thing about it right there.
Right. But we jumped over to archaeology, forbidden archaeology with Michael Cremo, and I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is amazing stuff.
Michael,
I'm back.
We were talking on the break a little bit about it, but I wanted to just talk.
The break to be longer, actually.
We talked a little bit on the break about this case I mentioned in the last half hour. We had, back, I think it was July of 2005. We had this insane month where we had like 400 people on the show. It was like, we tried to broadcast once a week, but we have so many people we want to come on the show that we have a special show sometimes.
It was, you know, every Sunday, which is our normal night.
Yeah, yeah.
And every Wednesday we had shows.
And then there was other days we threw in there too, just for good measure.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ghostly Talk Mania.
It was last July. That was it. It was wild.
Well, one of the people we had on, though, we'll mention both of them.
We started the month off
with John Anthony West. Okay, and we also, and the day
followed 3 days later.
Yeah, was it? I thought it was the next day.
It was the next day.
I don't remember exactly. Look at the archives page. I don't know. We had also his colleague, Dr. Robert Schock, who came on. And as we all know, sitting here at the Ghostly Talk studio, and you sitting there, Michael, that these gentlemen were the ones who started the work on redating
yes.
the Sphinx,
yes.
the Great Sphinx of Egypt. High level, we all, you know, if any of you have heard the show or if you've studied this at all, they've actually were able to, you know, through hard, and I stress
geological
this. Yeah, hard geological evidence. I want to stress that. They were able to, you know, obviously I don't even want to call it theory, it's what people believe, is that the Sphinx is around 4,500 years old. Okay? Dr. Robert Schock was able to prove, should I use the word prove, Michael? Am I pushing the boundaries by saying the word prove?
He was able to show evidence, I think.
Good idea. Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
That's a good way to say it.
Okay. He was able to show evidence that the Sphinx was actually close to 10,000 years old, possibly older than that, through, obviously, geological evidence like rain erosion patterns, sand erosion patterns, and things like that. This particular case, while it isn't nearly as old as some of the things we've talked about so far with you, it's the same type of ramifications, I think. It totally changes the whole idea. And I asked you if you were familiar about of this case on the break, and of course you said you were. I mean, I was just wondering if I get some thoughts on that from you concerning the Sphinx.
Well, you know, I think it is an amazing case. Of course, Bill Cote, who made the NBC television special Mysterious Origins of Man, also mm-hmm. made the special Mystery of the Sphinx.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was mm-hmm. the first show to really bring out, you know, that particular point. You know, I think researchers like John Anthony West and Robert Schock are working on one end of the time spectrum, and I'm working on the other end of the time spectrum. But it's all important because it's all dealing with, you know, coming up with alternatives to the current theories of human origins and civilizations and things like that. And, and like I said, some of us, I mean, there's got to be some division of labor. We can't all be working on the same part of the problem. So they're kind of focusing, as far as I understand, on the more recent end of the spectrum, changing our ideas about the origin of civilization, whereas I'm kind of operating at a deeper time level, talking about the origin of the human species itself. However, I think they're doing fantastic work. I really have a lot of respect and appreciation for both of them, and I've met John Anthony West a few times. Most recently, in Baltimore, we both spoke at a conference organized by the International Fortean Organization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for, you know, those of your listeners who might not be aware of it, Charles Fort was an American researcher who was operating in the early 20th century, and mm-hmm. he went searching through the scientific literature and found all kinds of anomalous phenomena, ranging from rains of frogs and fish to archaeological anomalies and all sorts of things, cryptozoology.
Mm-hmm.
And he published books about them, and these phenomena came to be known by his followers as Fortean phenomena. So there are people who are very interested in alternative history, the paranormal, and things like that. So we had a great time at that conference, had a lot of nice talks. He's a really fascinating fellow. He takes people on tours to Egypt, you know, to visit.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of the things John Anthony West does.
Exactly what's going on, at least John Anthony West does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's doing really great work, and he's a very intense personality, I have to say.
Oh, yeah, we've had him on the show, we know. he was all over us, but, I mean, we were like, we sat here in awe.
He tells me, I think I'm doing a good job. He tells me he thinks I'm being a little bit too giving too much of a soft glove kind of treatment, to the establishment in one sense.
Well, that's that's what really that amazes me about people like John Anthony West and yourself also, Michael, is that, we talked about this a little bit towards the end of the last segment, and this just seems to be the following motif of the show, is that it takes a lot of guts for people in your position. We're talking about professional, you guys are all professional people, this is how you make your living. Some people are literally, like you said, in the case we talked about, a woman lost her career over something like this, over really saying, look, this is the truth. We have hard evidence here. This is what we found. This person lost her career.
Yeah, well, I've always been I'm pretty much of a rebel, and actually one of my nightmares is that my ideas might become mainstream, because that's what I do. I have to revolt against myself.
Oh, those were last week's ideas.
Yeah, no, we have them all new this week.
Okay, I want some perspective.
Oh,
because
boy.
John Anthony West and Robert Schock are dealing with the recent past.
Yeah, and that's
just 10,000.
That's something that's funny that Dr. Schock told us. Remember, we were talking with him, and he's like, "Well, you see, you have to take this into account, guys.
He did.
There's two types of archaeologists. There's ones that deal with like the old stuff, and there's archaeologists.
Oh, not archaeologists, geologists.
Well, I'm sorry, geologists to deal with the old stuff, and then geologists to deal with the newer stuff. And we're like, okay, well, what's a newer geologist? What are they? About 5 million years. 5 million years. And we're like, okay, in geologist standards, that's very recent, actually.
Yeah, that's a recent archaeology. So I want some perspective, okay? What's the current accepted standard for how old the Earth is? Let's go all the way back. Why not? Yeah.
Today, most scientists would say the Earth is about 6 billion years old.
Okay.
And they would say that the very first life forms became present around 3 billion, maybe 3 billion years ago or so, the very most primitive, simple life forms. And then they would say the first life on land arose maybe 600 million years ago or so. And they would say the first apes and monkeys came into existence about 40 million years ago, the first ape men about 6 million years ago, and finally they would say humans like us came into existence between 100 and 200,000 years ago. That's the current timeline of life on Earth.
Okay.
And that's pretty fascinating, because there's a huge difference. I mean, 6 billion years, you're talking, wow.
Well, they would say at that time the Earth was just a molten mass.
Blob,
Took about a billion years for it to cool down, and then the ocean started forming in the atmosphere. And by the time you get to around 3 or 3.5 billion years ago, things have progressed to a point where the first life forms could exist. That's the current idea.
How would that change based on all of a sudden thinking, okay, there might have been humans like us making tools 10 million years ago?
When I look at the evidence, when I did this 8 years of research, I found the evidence goes much further back than 10 million years. I think the evidence goes right back to the very beginnings of the history of life on Earth, what I found is, I mentioned the California gold mine discoveries that were 50 million years old.
Mm-hmm.
There are reports and scientific publications of human skeletons having been found in layers of rock 300 million years old. There's a report in the old edition of Scientific American of a beautiful metallic vase that was found in layers of rock 600 million years old. The oldest objects that I actually found in my research are round metallic objects with parallel grooves that go around the center of them that come from South Africa. And these have been found in layers of rock over 2 billion years old. So you've got a lot of discoveries, not just a few. I've just mentioned a few of them on the program here,
yeah.
But in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, I document hundreds of these cases. So we're not just talking about a few isolated discoveries. We're talking about a whole bunch of discoveries that go back not just 10 million years, but 100 million years, 500 million years, a billion years, even further.
You said these spherical objects were dated back 2 billion years?
Yes.
That's an astronomical number.
Yes, it is. You know, a lot of times, you know, like I speak in different countries. My book's been published in about 20 different languages, and I get lots of invitations to speak in a lot of different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go to these different countries, I have translators. You know, so I remember once I was in Prague in the Czech Republic, and I was giving a lecture, and I mentioned, you know, these discoveries being, you know, 2 billion years old, and the translator said 2 million. You know,
because
I could understand the language, I understood what he was saying. I said, no, you got it wrong. You're not two billion.
I was thinking everybody at that point.
They can't believe what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, that number, that's an astronomical figure. It's very hard to get your head around that and say, the idea is that there may have been someone who made this thing on this planet.
Well, of course, different people have different theories. I mean, I just put in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, I was very careful just to put the evidence, you know, the factual details about the discoveries and the age of the layers of rock in which they were found.
Mm.
Now, I decided I was going to leave, because you were talking a bit earlier in the show about, you know, different people having different theories. Of course, I've got a theory about it. I've got some explanation. But I thought I would put that in a different book, because I just wanted that book, Forbidden Archaeology, just to have factual information in it, and then let people make up their own theories about it.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of theories. I mean, some people have proposed time travelers. Some people have proposed that the objects were left, you know, in these very early times by alien visitors from other planets.
That's what I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. And other people have proposed, like, new theories of evolution that would have human beings coming into existence far earlier and this and that and the other. So, I mean, of course, I had my own ideas about it, but I just thought, well, let me, in this book, just put the facts there and then let people think about them and decide.
Let them flesh it out on their own, more or less.
On their own.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a discussion. You know, they'll write their book about their theory. I'll write my book about mine, and we can talk about the theories if you want. But, I mean, that's another whole question.
Well, that number. Go ahead, Doug.
First, if I set something down, let's say, and how long can I predict it would hang around? I mean, if I'm just out and about, maybe I'm on a beach or at a picnic or whatever, and I've got this thing that eventually will become an artifact if left in place long enough
yeah,
you know.
Right.
And I set it down. How long could it take before it?
I'll try to give you some idea, because you're bringing up a very important point, and you know, I think, well, first of all, there's two ways to get information about what happened in the past. You know, one is to look at what's left today, you know, in what we might call the record of the rocks,
mm-hmm.
and just see what's there and try to figure it out from that. Another way to get information about the past is to look at information that has been left by the intelligent beings that existed in the distant past. And really, that's what got me into this whole subject in the first place. I didn't even think about this sort of thing until I started reading the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which speak of human civilizations that existed in the very distant past. Until I encountered those writings, I didn't really have any reason to question what I'd always been taught in school and at the university and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I decided, you know, after encountering these descriptions, which are found not just the ancient Sanskrit writings, but the writings of practically most of the ancient wisdom traditions of the world, I said, well, maybe there's some physical evidence. So that's what got me started looking, you know, for that kind of evidence. And what I learned is that to get back to the question that you're asking, what is left in the earth?
Uh-huh.
The kinds of evidence that we're talking about are found in what a geologist would call sedimentary rock. It means rock that was once mud or sand or, you know, like you said, standing on a beach. You know, that beach will turn into sandstone at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
But just like there are processes by which layers of rock are formed, there are processes by which layers of rock are destroyed. In other words, there are processes of erosion and things that are going on. So you've got some of the information being recorded, you could say, in the record of the rocks, and some of it's being erased.
Mm.
And geologists like Robert Schock would tell you that over the course of the couple of billion years that we're talking about, over 90, probably about 95% of the layers of sedimentary rock that have ever been laid down have been destroyed.
Mm.
So that as you go further back in time, there's less and less, you know, original rock left, you know, to look at. Another thing we have to consider is the nature of what we're talking about that's being left in the ground and how likely it is to be preserved. You know, for example, most organic things decay.
Yeah,
right.
Especially the soft parts and things like that. Fossilization's actually quite a rare event. For it to happen, I mean, that's why I think we find a lot of seashells in the fossil record, because, you know, a seashell is made of calcium carbonate. It's like a kind of rock itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of stays there. The soft parts of animals fossilize less often. And mostly they fossilize if they are buried in mud and protected from oxidation, from rotting. So usually it's animals that live in swampy, muddy types of conditions that get fossilized. Animals that live in forests don't tend to get fossilized very much.
Well, once they pass away, I mean, we found this through studying, well, just... I'm not trying to slant this conversation in any way, Michael, but one of the questions we asked Lauren Coleman, one of our favorite people as far as cryptozoology is concerned, is, okay, wait, you got Bigfoot running around. You say there's Bigfoots all over the place. They're or big feet. How would you say that?
Bigfoots.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're running all over the place. How come we haven't found the carcass of one? Right? And he's like, well, you'd be surprised how fast something just disappears in the woods, right? That somehow, in a way, kind of lends into what we're talking about now, because something in the forest, like you're saying, you know, if an animal dies,
have to be absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah. But an animal dies, and, I mean, we know what happens. Decay is one thing. There's lots of other scavengers in the forest also that are going to eat away at that carcass, right?
Right.
That's going to be gone. It's going to be gone very quick.
Yeah. I mean, how often do you see a dead bird?
Yeah.
Really, anywhere. I mean, it's like there are millions of them. We should practically be buried in them.
Yeah, but...
No, you usually find them in the mouth of a cat. That's what I've found.
Right.
Cats pick them up.
Right. So, but nevertheless, I mean, so we're not getting a perfect record of what existed in the past. It's like if you have a book, a 1,000-page book, and you've only got 50 pages left of it, and those 50 pages are written in a foreign language, and they've been ripped up into little pieces, and you kind of throw them into a box, and you pick out a few of them, and you try to decide what the whole book says. It's not a very easy process.
No.
But I think there is enough information there to tell us what we're being told now is not the real story. I think that's pretty clear. So to answer your question, I think a lot depends. But the basic thing we have to keep in mind is that we're not getting a complete record of the past.
Well, that's
what's left there now.
What about... Okay, let's go 10,000 years. Oh, I know.
Well, no, that's cool.
4 minutes.
That's all right.
Let's go 10,000 years from now. What would be left? I mean, hopefully our civilizations thrive and last.
Lots of styrofoam.
Lots of styrofoam?
Okay. I'll answer that one for
you.
But
what would somebody say if all of a sudden, heaven forbid, something nasty happens, we're all wiped out, 10,000 years from now, some new people start digging through our old stuff. I mean,
well, I think after 10,000 years, there could still be quite a bit left. If you start talking about millions of years, which is the time range I deal with, you're talking about something else. Actually, once there was a discussion on a scientific group on the internet that I was just monitoring, I was lurking at, and there were some archaeologists who raised this question: what if there had been a civilization like ours that existed 100 million years ago, during the time of the dinosaurs? What evidence would there be left today? And they were talking about it, and they said, well, probably very little, because most of the metals will oxidize, except gold. That's gold. Gold is considered valuable because it doesn't oxidize. It doesn't rust. It doesn't decay. Most other metals, after a very short time, will disappear. There are huge battlefields, World War II battlefields in Europe, where there were huge battles. There were all kinds of machinery and weapons and ammunition, and you go there today, you can find hardly anything because it's all rusted away. And that's only after about 50 or 60 years. But say, go back to this 100 million years. So what these archaeologists and geologists said was you would probably see only very little, because the metals would have oxidized, the plastics and organic things would have decayed, the stone would be reduced to rubble, and after 100 million years, it'd be covered with many, many other layers of sediment, rock, and lava, and things like that. So they said that all you might see might be a few thin bands of multicolored, gravel, but that you wouldn't even
notice, and I bet they'd be specifically looking for it. And I'm willing to bet my money, actually, Michael, they'd probably be in the shape of two golden arches, too, probably. I had to say that.
Widely scattered all over the world.
Why don't we take a quick...
I see them everywhere. I see them in Moscow. I see them in India.
Well, there you go. Yeah, my point exactly.
And they'll be like, what? This is the equivalent of a trilobite.
This was the god of the time. It ruled the planet.
Maybe find the actual food itself.
It's
a little hard to digest.
I think that would probably fossilize on its own completely if you just put that anywhere.
I think you find a Twinkie.
Yeah, there you go. Like,
this was an ancient bookmark or something. I don't know. Wow, it's a Twinkie.
Let's take a quick break. Let's take a quick break here, real quick. I want to. Oh man, that's a way to kill a segment, huh?
Yeah, that really does. I think you need some levity though to handle the. This is a lot so serious.
Was this a product placement?
Absolutely not.
No, that's why we never mentioned.
You mentioned the T word. You mentioned the T word, man. No, sometimes we slip up, Michael. We try not to do that, but sometimes we slip up. So they get a little from us, unfortunately. But no, we are not advertising for any of those people. Obviously,
no.
We'll be right back after this.
Lewis of GroundZeroRadio.com, and you are listening to Ghostly Talk, and I know why, because the voices told me to.
would thank you. Next time, leave your name. Bye. His mother.
Website, www.bellwitch.org, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
No, this has been a heck of a show.
This has been a heck of a series of shows.
Yeah, you mentioned that a minute ago. There's been it's been really interesting here. Like
the past three shows, I think it was, has been challenging our thinking.
Really hard.
Really hard, and opening my mind and our minds, hopefully, and trying to find some kind of worldview,
yeah,
I guess.
Well,
of,
or other worldview.
Or other worldview.
Who knows? I mean, there's so much out there to learn, you know, and it's some, these shows aren't always the easiest to get through because we're learning along with you guys. We're learning just like you guys are, so we're going on.
We don't know what
you guys have. Yeah, I'm kind of like a ghost myself floating around here trying to take all this information in. By the way, a lot of stuff we've been talking about with Michael Cremo tonight, obviously all fascinating stuff. There, if you go to Michael Cremo's website, which I've one of these things we look over, we always try to get all the information out there. We forgot to mention his website. It's www.mcremo.com. There's a ton of information up on Michael's site to check out also. Right, Michael?
That's right. Thanks.
Sorry about that. The thing what we talked about, we've been wanting to talk about this. There,
my own bit of product placement.
There you go.
Hey, no problem. All these ideas we're talking about all this dating and all these things going back and all this time. Doug brought this.
I asked this on the previous break.
Well, yeah, I don't want to make it. It's an obvious question. I don't mean that in a bad way.
Thanks.
I don't mean it like that. It's an obvious question. It begs to be asked.
This is the kind of thing that you have to start with when you start thinking about things.
Yeah.
And it almost always has to start with, what does it mean to me? right? Why does this change my worldview? How can I fit this in with what I already think? Or does this destroy what I already think? That's the progression. And you've got to start with, what does it mean to me? And so I was wondering, and I asked this, and it's probably a crass and harsh question and probably obvious.
Yeah.
But if mankind, if human beings of some form or another, I mean, whether they were critical thinking and had a driver license or were, you know, just existing off of nuts and berries and what were out there, elk or buffalo.
The two things aren't necessarily contradictory.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
If they existed, you know, a couple of 10,000 years ago or 500,000 years ago or 3 billion years ago, why does that make a difference?
Well, it's a very good question. I think what it points to is that we need a new explanation for human origins.
Mm-hmm.
And the kinds of alternatives that are going to be proposed are going to be, I think, mostly they're going to be coming from some kind of spiritual or paranormal kind of perspective. And I think that is what the real significance is. And I mean, this question of human origins, it's really not just a matter for a few ivory tower, you know, scientists to talk about it. I think it really does have a big impact on all of our lives. And here's how it goes. The ideas that we have about ourselves, the goals that we set for ourselves in particular, individually and collectively, are to a large extent determined by the answers we give to the fundamental questions, who am I and where did I come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the past 150 years or so, through their monopoly in the education system, the scientists, with their current evolutionary theory of human origins, have been able to dictate to everyone, practically speaking, the answers to those fundamental questions. In other words, they're telling us, well, you're really a bunch of chemicals. That's what you really are. You may think you're something else, but if you want to know the real truth, you're just a very complex organization of chemicals. You're just another type of animal, really. So what we're getting are some very materialistic answers to these fundamental questions.
Yeah.
And I think, therefore, it's no surprise that our whole worldwide, you know, civilization has taken a very materialistic direction, so much so that most people think that the primary purpose of human existence is to produce and consume more and more material things. And that means we get involved in a lot of conflict for possession of these material resources and the opportunities to enjoy them or exploit them or dominate them. And I think that produces a lot of conflict in families. I think it produces a lot of conflict in societies because of the class structures. And then you get a lot of competition on a more international level for scarce resources like oil and things like that.
Mm.
And I think it engenders a lot of conflict, a lot of frustration. I mean, the rates of depression and suicide and things like that keep going up and up in most of the developed countries of the world. So I think these questions really do have an impact on all of us. So the significance of this evidence for extreme human antiquity is that I think it leads us to see the necessity for a different set of answers to these fundamental questions. Who am I and where did I come from? You know, for example, what if we found that that scientists were telling us that really we're beings of pure consciousness, and our purpose of life here on Earth isn't simply to dominate and exploit the material resources to the maximum extent possible, which is the direction we're going in. And what if we should be putting more of our human energy into developing the resource of consciousness? Realize we're all here on spaceship Earth. We're all on a certain level, brothers and sisters or whatever. And I think it would lead to a different set of goals for us individually and collectively that might result in a whole different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of ideas about what this alternative should be. You know, in my latest book, Human Devolution, I've offered an alternative. And what I say in that book is I think we have to look deeply at ourselves. And today most scientists are going to say we're a combination of ordinary matter, the ordinary chemical elements. But when I look out at the world, at all the information that comes to me, I see it's more reasonable to say that a human being or any other living thing is a combination of three things: matter, mind, and consciousness. And I think that leads to an explanation for the ghost phenomenon, frankly speaking, because I would think what a ghost is a conscious being that has a body of subtle mental energies but does not have a body of the gross physical elements.
Mm.
And that can exist in this world in that way. But to get back to your question, what difference does it make whether human beings existed, you know, just the 100,000 years that most scientists now think possible, or where they existed, you know, millions and millions and millions of years ago, is that it leads us to a new concept of what a human being is and what a human being should be. And I think that's the ultimate significance of it. And yeah, to some people, maybe that doesn't mean anything, but to some people, I think it does. So the stones and bones, I think your question shows that the kind of thing I've been talking about in forbidden archaeology, the stones and bones of, you know, it leads to deeper questions.
Well, it does lead to a much deeper idea of understanding of who we are. And that question, like I said, it was begged to be asked, because what ramifications really would it have if, and I've said this about UFOs, for example, too, if our president was to come on the air one night and say, listen, guys, I got a level with you. UFOs do exist. They're out there. We're being visited by them every day.
Well, there are some other ramifications. I think, let's just look at this. I think there are a lot of forces in the world, a lot of powerful interests that want to see us focused on material production and consumption, because it generates a lot of wealth. A lot of wealth that flows into the pockets of scientists who are, you know, inventing the drugs and the weapons and the consumer products. A lot of money flows into the pockets of the big corporations that manufacture the weapons, the consumer products, and the drugs, the medicines. A lot of money goes into the pockets of the governments that tax, you know, all this increased economic activity. So I think there are a lot of forces that want to see us as human beings focused on material production and consumption. I mean, where do you ever see any other message? The message on radio, television, and the internet is buy this, consume this, consume that. So I think there are a lot of forces in the world that want to see us focused on that. One of the most significant things I found after 9/11 event was that people stopped shopping. People stopped flying on airplanes. They just wanted to sit with their friends and their relatives and just think, well, what the heck is going on? I mean, what is this human civilization coming to? Because they were focusing on something other than production and consumption of material things, you know, the economy dipped a little bit. And that caused shockwaves in the political and economic establishments around the world. I think I can recall our president going on television after that to some shopping center with his credit card saying, hey, I'm shopping. Get out and shop.
Everybody lead normal lives.
They want you to be scared all the time.
Fly, buy, do something.
Well, I can verify that.
Plastic.
I can verify that, Michael. The first thing I thought of, I don't know about you guys, but the day that happened, and you know, we talked about this a bit last week too. The day that happened when 9/11 occurred, the first thing I thought of doing was getting my sister out of school and getting her home with my mother and father, so we could all be together. That was the first. That was the first thing I thought of.
And I think that I think there are a lot of forces in the world that would rather see us just forget about everything like that and just keep our nose to the grindstone.
Well, keep working, you know. And
that's what's making the world go around these days. So I think if we were putting more of our human time and energy into what I would call consciousness raising, developing the resources of consciousness rather than, you know, the resources of matter, that would result in some changes, some fundamental changes in our society, our politics, our economics, and our individual lives as well. I think now it's not a question of to me of going back to the Stone Age, but I think it's a question of balance. You know, if you eat too much of the wrong kinds of stuff, it's going to be, you know, bad for your health. But the solution is not to stop eating; it's to eat the right amount of the right kinds of food. So I think our human civilization is like a little bit out of balance, and I think, you know, the ghost evidence and things, I think that's telling us something about consciousness and mind and spirit, that there's more than matter. We have to start thinking about where we're going to wind up, you know, once it comes time for us to make the passage. And, you know, so I think great civilizations in the past had a better balance.
I think that really puts a foot on it right there. That's really the bottom line. And I, you know, I've been trying to put words to something like this for so long, and well, you've done it, Michael. we need this balance. I mean, we do, like you said, there is this degree, you need a material type of thing in your life. You need food. You need these physical things to survive.
But it has to be properly balanced.
Yeah.
I think we've got, and if you're unbalanced, then it's going to be bad for your health. You're going to be bloated. And I think that's what's happened to our civilization.
Tell me about
it. It's become unbalanced, bloated. But we just got to get ourselves in shape. That's all.
There's also the idea, then, of the desire not to be lied to, or not so much lied to. I think everybody probably believes whatever agenda they're pushing, but...
To a large extent, I think that's true, yes. For example, these people in these museums, they don't think they're hiding any true evidence that contradicts their theories, which, if known, would cause people to contradict. They think something's got to be wrong with this. I don't know what. You know, if I asked some specialist, he'd probably be able to tell me. But, yeah, therefore, we're not going to show it to the public, not because we think it's true, but because, well, it just doesn't seem to fit.
Well, do you also think this is another idea I've heard concerning this with a lot of things, not just forbidden archaeology, for example? There are people in positions of power that just think that the people below them can't handle it mentally. And I don't want to say they're too dumb to handle it. They just believe that, okay, look, if we were to let people know that the human experience, or the humans, there have been humans on this earth for over 2 billion years. These people just couldn't handle this kind of information. It would be malproductive to give them this type of information. So we'll be better off just not letting them know that and let them believe this over here, which is much easier to swallow. Do you follow what I'm saying on that?
Yeah, and if it keeps people absorbed in material production and consumption, so much the better.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
That's what I think is what's really behind it. I think there are some cases of deliberate suppression and destruction of evidence that have taken place as well.
Well, I'm fairly sure there is.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is. I think part of the equation is they just don't believe a lot of this stuff is true. And the second part of it is, I think there's some of them who think, well, it is true, but it's not beneficial for their goals. It doesn't help their goals. And then a lot of times, I think there could also be some cases of, I mean, really deliberate suppression of evidence.
And a lot of it may have to do with these goals we're talking about. The goals of a few, I think I might add. I think there's only a few people that believe this certain way, and unfortunately they're in that seat of power where they can suppress this information, unfortunately. And they keep the rest of us, it seems, and this may be a bit slighted, this might be a bit biased, but it seems like they keep the rest of us in this rat race after these material possessions, And this this is what I see every day. This is what we see every day. Like you just said, what do we hear on the radio, TV, and the internet? Well, buy this, buy that, buy this. After 9/11, like you said, the president's doing commercials. And the thing that grinds my nerves about that so much was, okay, there was a bit of a recession in the economy. We did get a bit of a dip because people did go, hey, you know, maybe there's more to life than buying that new car next week. Maybe I should spend more time with my family.
Look what happened to, say, Christmas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's some kind of spiritual holiday. I remember years and years ago in the 60s, I went to Bethlehem on Christmas Eve and went to the Nativity Church and all that. It was a very wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you come back to, you know, the 21st century here in the United States, and you look at the news coverage on Christmas, it's turned into a national marathon of sales. That's what you hear on the news.
And it starts earlier
Christmas
and earlier.
Christmas sales are up, you know, or down. Christmas sales are down 4% from last year. Get out there, people. Get the numbers up.
Well, yeah, and they've sucked.
It's like a telethon.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And any sincerity.
Total Christmas sales, 1.2 billion.
Not that, you know, like, well, maybe it's time to think about, you know, how we can be better friends and neighbors and stuff like that. The sales of the shopping centers are down from last year.
I think it has an adverse effect on our attitudes now, Michael. I know when Christmas comes, I get more and more stressed out and angry every year that goes by. It's more of a stressor.
And you know what?
Seems.
They say that's a problem with you, society.
Yeah, it's my fault. I'm just a jerk, right?
Right, and it's not the other way around. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Maybe it is the other way around.
So that's the significance of forbidden archaeology.
That's pretty significant.
It's very significant. I mean, I can cite example after example concerning Christmas. I mean, every year, like I said, I mean, it's a great example because every year it seems like people are getting more and more ridiculous.
You got Scott Elbert.
You got me all set. Well, I told you about the crazy lady that tried to kill me at the store that one year.
Over the
cat litter thing. I mean, that was Christmas Eve, for God's sake. The woman tried to punch me in the face. I mean, a roundhouse shot to the face that if it would have connected, would have probably knocked me on the floor. I'm not kidding you. This is Christmas Eve we're talking about. When I was
that's
a child,
survival of the fittest.
You're very right, I think. I mean, we're talking about it's Christmas, though. That was on Christmas Eve. And I've never in my life, I mean, 10 years before that, I would have never imagined something like that happening to me at that holiday. But now, stress.
Did we end up talking about anything you wanted to talk about, Michael?
Well, I actually was steering the conversation direction. You guys went right along with it. I don't know how that happened.
I don't know. That really worked. For me.
What?
Wow.
This illustrates this
because
idea.
I think the question that you raise, I mean, what difference does it make if humans are 50 or 500 million years old or whatever? I think this is what it goes. It's a question that leads back to, if we didn't evolve from the apes, then where did we come from? And the answers are going to be more, I would guess, say, spiritual kinds of answers or consciousness-based of answers that lead to a whole different way of looking at us, who we are, where we should be going, how we should be relating to others, what's our purpose here in this big universe. So that's why I was really happy that you asked that question, because it really does lead to Santa Claus.
You've attracted some interest. Michael, I've been monitoring the chat room because we stay in a chat room during the show.
Okay.
I don't really monitor it all the time, but I glance every so often. And the folks at Robin Valley Community Radio, which is a small but very significant low power, or, well, I don't know, it's AM.
Hey, they're high power.
They're high power?
They're high power.
Well, they are. They're in
Omaha, Nebraska, for God's sake. Yeah,
Nebraska.
We got it this time.
And they said, this is a show idea, okay? Mm-hmm. And we don't usually get show ideas in the chat room, but this is a show idea. Ask Mike Cremo if he will come back. I would love to have a show with lots of examples of anomalous items.
Oh, would you be interested in doing that, Michael? Jeez.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, set up with Lori.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that.
Because folks are interested. Folks are interested in this, and they're even asking about it and talking about it in the chat room. So
I think
so,
what this ties into, the bottom line really is, you know, if this is the case, Michael, where there may be some alternative history to who we are and what we're all about. If we knew this information and we had this information, then we'd have the power to question it. And that's what the bottom line, I think, is there. And that's how we're kept in this race.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to do that. You're trying to do that. I think there are a lot of us in this world who are, you know, researchers, media people like you who are getting the information out, bringing people onto your show,
mm-hmm.
the listeners, you know, who may go and ask a, you know, high school kid who may ask a question in class to a teacher. I think it's all, we're all doing our part.
Yeah, and it's really important, I think, also.
I also want to make a point.
Yes.
It's not my point. It's actually Michael's point. I know we said it a couple times,
mm-hmm.
but the sequel to Forbidden Archaeology is Human Devolution.
Devolution, yeah.
It starts with a D. So if you're searching for human evolution,
mm-hmm.
or evolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not it. It's devolution. So
yeah.
It's a D, which says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That extra letter says a lot.
an awful lot. Michael, we'll talk more. I mean, if we'd like to come back on, we could do something like that again if you'd like. I'll talk to Lori about that.
Oh, sure, yeah. Talk to Lori, set it up. You know, she knows my travel schedule and everything. So
excellent.
At some point in the future,
yeah.
when it's convenient for you and convenient for me, we'll do it again.
Sounds great. Excellent.
And of course, your website is www.mcremo.com.
You got it.
.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Michael, stay on the line for 1 second, okay? We're just going to close the show out.
Yeah, because we have to make way for
Moon Radio.
Laura doing a show today?
I believe so.
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then we have to make way for Moon
Radio.
She has to boot us out of the way.
Next on Pioneer and OmniSound is Full Moon Radio. So everybody stay tuned for Full Moon Radio. I'd like to thank everybody.
Thank Elmo for coming on, talking about the stuff he's working on.
Thanks, Stephen Browdy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, thank Michael Cremo for sharing all this mind-boggling stuff. It's amazing. And thank you to all the listeners and
all the affiliates
that you guys make the show go round.
We appreciate it very much.
We do.
We'll be back here next week at the same time, same place, same dudes, hopefully.
Yeah, and next week, Dr. Ken, everybody, go to the website.
Oh, yeah.
It's linked up. Go to his website. Look at the video.
Dr. Ken's coming on next week.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I just maintain the schedule. I don't remember it.
I'm
just want to make that very clear. I don't know what's going on.
It's
going
to be awesome, but we do have to get off.
Yeah, we have to get off.
Full Moon Radio. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
The media becomes the media.